everything that I know. Says I gotta go, tired of going solo. But I'm never gonna go there again. This is what it is, this is who I am. This is where I finally take my stand. I didn't wanna fall, but I don't have to crawl. I'm not the one with two star hands. Giving him the best of everything that's left of the life inside this man. I've been born again.
Yep, yep, yep. Well, Dave.
Hey.
Are we on? Yes, we are.
Barely hear myself. Okay.
Really?
Yep.
Well, you're way. Oh, you know what? It's probably. Did you change headphones?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's probably the problem.
I'm on one.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But does that help?
Yes. See, that's number one. Yep, that's it.
Okay, good.
Hey, I'm alive.
It's nice to hear him say. I have to confess, I like to hear myself too. We have our guests in here, and sometimes we don't give them headphones.
Yeah.
But once you get used to hearing yourself, mm-hmm. you almost have to hear yourself. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's that security blanket.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I exist.
You surround
I'm
yourself.
Relevant.
Yes, I am because I hear.
And it is Texas Tech Colors Day.
Yes, it is.
But
guns up.
Underneath it all, these are my superpowers.
Lightning engineer. That's
lighting.
Right. Oh, lighting. Yeah.
Yes. It's
lightning engineer.
When we finish the show, I got three jobs to get done today if the weather holds out.
Hey, by the way, I have to say something. And this is, it's going to be offensive, but it's not meant to be an offense. It's just to clarify some things.
It's typical Eddie.
Yes. Typical. Non-offensive offense. Yeah. I had to clarify for my wife. I hate to do this to OSU people, but I just have to for the sake of
here it comes
of yes. You have stolen several of our things.
Mm.
Okay, this, for example,
pistols firing.
It is not pistols firing. It's guns up. Okay, we came up with this. Okay, that's one. Okay,
it never existed until Texas Tech.
The other thing is. And actually, I don't know if this is an Oklahoma State thing, but the thing of the Raider power, one side of the stadium.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's OU or OSU that stole that mm-hmm. one, you know, where they say, though, I guess it's Boomer Sooner.
Yeah.
It's Raider power. That's another Texas Tech thing. The horse and rider. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a Texas Tech thing.
Hmm.
Oh, by the way. In fact, it's not just you guys, others. You know the Seminole, the Indian riding out
mm-hmm.
on the horse, and he plants that spear into the middle of the field
mm-hmm.
at the beginning of the Florida State games?
Mm-hmm.
Stole that from Texas Tech.
Oh.
Yeah. We're innovators. We have a sorry football team,
yeah.
but the peripherals are good. Seriously, I looked all these things up, you know. I didn't even realize, because my wife and I got into this argument about the pistols firing and the guns mm-hmm. up, which I knew was
mm-hmm.
Started by Tech when I was there in the Raider power, and there were a couple of other things. But anyway, and as I was looking through, it listed all the things that other schools had stolen from that Tech had come up with. But what happened, Tech played Florida State back in the 60s or mm-hmm. somewhere. And the Florida State people were so impressed with our
mm-hmm.
rider,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Red Raider as he comes mm-hmm. charging out
yeah.
with the, you know.
Like the Lone Ranger. Kind of.
Yeah. And so Florida State liked it. And that's when they came up with their native riding out with the spear. Which I have to say, though, if you're going to steal something, do it right.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida State has done it right.
Good.
In fact, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. I love it. I love when he riding that horse raises up and he does this and he comes down and plants that
yes.
spear. I got goosebumps again.
It's drama.
It is the coolest thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I have to say it's cooler than mm-hmm. ours. So that's why I'm saying if you're going to steal it, do it better.
Yeah.
And that is a cool thing.
Now, my favorite planting the flag thing was Baker Mayfield at Ohio State.
Well, not really, because he's trying to plant it in AstroTurf.
I know, but
and it didn't even have a point on it. I mean, come on.
You're getting such. It's the intent. It is the insult of we own you. We just beat you. You were the number one team in the nation. We came to your house first game of the year and spanked you.
It was,
and we stole Baker Mayfield from Texas Tech.
yeah. But show some class.
I know.
Instead of your...
He did apologize because it was over the edge. I mean, it was like...
Okay. I mean, you know, I mean, honestly, that's the only thing I don't like about Baker Mayfield. It just, he has no class.
Okay.
The other, the crotch grabbing, that.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, and then later on, you know, and his dad and them going after Cliff Kingsbury. We talked about this, I think, last week or before, that... They're still attacking Cliff Kingsbury after he's in the NFL.
Yeah.
Baker wouldn't even be in the NFL if it weren't for Cliff Kingsbury. I'm sure of that. I think we've talked about it. Baker Mayfield had the only team that had recruited him basically was Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
So think of where he would be without it. So Kingsbury gave him the opportunity to come as a preferred walk-on, which is basically you don't, because normally the way the rules are, walk-on rules now, you don't get to come out until the spring of your freshman year. Then you come on to the team. The preferred walk-ons get to come on in the fall.
Yeah.
Okay. So he came on, ended up starting. He got injured. And then came back late in the season, okay? Well, then Tech has this tradition. They give the scholarship when you come back. They have a meeting, and then they announce so-and-so.
In the spring semester.
In the spring semester.
Yeah.
They announce the first week before it starts, we're giving scholarships now to so-and-so.
Yeah.
Well, that wasn't good enough for Baker and his dad or whoever. So he decides, no, I'm leaving. I'm going to Oklahoma. And he blames it on the fact that he didn't get a scholarship after he won Big 12 Freshman of the Year. And he said, oh, I should have gotten it. Nobody in the history of the school has ever gotten a scholarship
before. Yeah, it looked like a hissy fit. I agree.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just, but in bottom line, what it was, his dad is an OU alum.
Okay.
So his dad always wanted him to go to OU, and he just used this as an excuse for Baker to go to OU. And if it hadn't been for the fact that he, Cliff got him to Tech, started him, trained him, and basically gave him the venue to showcase his talent, he probably would never, ever have been able to be what he was at OU.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they wouldn't have picked him up from Oregon State.
Right.
Back then. They had the sorriest teams in the world. And from there to be, you know, what was he, number one or two draft choice of Cleveland?
He was number one in the NFL.
Right. Okay. So all of that. And then he still feels, he and his dad, that they have to go after Cliff Kingsbury? Are you kidding me? I mean, it just shows me.
You know what? Sometimes that just shows me you're a little insecure about your behavior. And so you got to double down on trashing the other guy to cover up for what you're not proud of.
I guess. That may be it. But it just, you know, to me, it just, no need for it. You know, and Cliff never said one negative word about them or anything, you know. And to me, it just brings down everything. And so, you know, and also after all of that, then, you know, and then you know, it kind of got me that OU then gets upset because what's his name? Riley, Lincoln, and the QB go to California, and they throw a fit because they go out there, and everybody's still upset because they left. Even though Kyler Murray comes in right behind Baker, does the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it's,
you know,
childish.
Yeah, there's, I mean, no doubt. Come on. I mean, it's okay for you to steal from other teams, but it's not okay from other teams to steal from you. You know, I mean, come on, at some point, what's fair for one has got to be fair for all.
Oh, you know, and I'll just tack on to that to make your point. There was a group of Packer backers that would have a tailgate party every Sunday morning at the Marriott 71st and Lewis. Well, Brett Favre was having great years there about 20 years ago, and then they kicked him off the team. That's flat out what happened.
Kicked Brett Favre off.
Yeah, he was like, well, I don't know, you know, and they and finally, he said, no, we're not going to wait for you to decide whether you're playing another year. We're going with Aaron Rodgers. And right. So all of a sudden, he doesn't have a team. Well, the Jets picked him up a year, and then the Vikings did. And what do you know? He and the Vikings cleaned house. And every Packer backer I knew was mad at Brett Favre.
Yeah.
And I said, you kicked him off the team. What do you expect? Well, still, we're just mad that he went to the Vikings. You know, you fired him. He needed a job.
I know.
And that's just how childish they act.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and, you know, and I, you know, and it's so funny because when Baker first left, okay, I was excited for him at OU. Because, I mean, there was a doctor friend of mine, a big OU fan.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to OU, I told him, I said, oh, you got a great one. I mean, I was all behind him. I said, great.
Right.
You know, that, you know, they didn't give him the scholarship and da-da-da. And so I was all supportive of him. And I said, you watch him. He's going to be good. And he said, oh, really? You think so? And I said, yeah, you watch. And sure enough. You know, the spring came, and the next thing, and then the at the spring game is where Baker really showed his stuff, you know, and then the next season, and the rest is history, you know. So I was very much a supporter, and I really supported the team and him doing that. But then when he started this stuff where he couldn't just show class and leave and thank Kingsbury and the school for, you know, providing the opportunity and getting him to that point and to where, and in fact, at the Heisman thing, he probably should have thanked Cliff Kingsbury in addition to Bob Stoops.
Yeah.
And what's his name?
Lincoln had just taken over from Stoops the year he won the Heisman.
Right. You know, he should have thanked both of them.
Sure.
Or all three for getting him to where he was, you know.
You think everybody
I mean,
that had a hand.
Invited him there, but everybody that had a hand in it, exactly, he needed to thank. But instead, what does he do? He trashes the genesis of it all, you know. And that just, I'm just saying, that's not the way to do it. But, you know, so you take, what's his name, for example, at USC right now.
Williams.
Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He never says a word about OU.
That's true.
Sir, nothing. Lincoln. You know, they don't need to.
Well,
this is where we are.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts would be a great example because he got benched for Tua and... You know, he comes to OU. You didn't hear him trashing Alabama.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's a perfect example right there. And so, but that's just the class act.
Yeah.
You know, that shows how you do it. You know? In fact, I don't know how many people watch ESPN's game day every Saturday morning before all the games. And well, There was an All-American linebacker out of Georgia, Dave Pollack. And David Pollack was one of their main guys for about 10 or 11 years. And he got fired last year. And Dave is a very, very strong Christian guy. And I have a feeling that that may be one of the reasons he got fired. I don't know. But anyway, he was very hurt. But as a Christian, he... just said, you know, though he was hurt, he had to look at it as positive that, you know, as somebody says, you know, what's the old saying you've heard, I'm sure, it's very prominent in the faith community that when God shuts one door,
he opens
another one.
A window. Sometimes it's when God shuts a door, he opens a window.
Oh, right. I've always heard if he shuts one door, he opens another one.
Yeah,
but it's
too.
The same principle, basically.
It is.
And so David had to look at it in that way.
Yeah, it's change.
And, right. And now, you know, he's a public speaker.
Yeah.
He's coaching his son's high school team and things like that. And who knows what doors in the future will open to this guy, you know. Mm-hmm. But we know that he loves the Lord. He's a real straight, strong Christian guy. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to muzzle anything anymore.
There you go.
You know, all of that. So, mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer that when you do honor and praise God in that way, mm-hmm. God does honor it.
Yeah.
He does. You may not see it today, tomorrow, but the day will come when God honors it. It's just one of those principles.
Yeah.
I've seen it in my life many times. It's been hard. It's been mm-hmm. hard. You know, I've been peed on a few times in my life. Yeah. And it's been hard, you know. And yet, you know, when I begrudgingly, I haven't always taken it well.
Sure.
But I have. In fact, do you know Don Francisco?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's alive.
He writes ballads, Christian ballads.
Right, Christian artist. And mm-hmm.
Great,
anyway,
great songwriter.
I did a little tour with it was just me and him. We traveled together, and I did set up everything, and I ran sound, and we stay in the hotels together, mm-hmm. and eat together, and got mm-hmm. to know him real well. And he knew I was going through some real crazy, and I wanted to sue this guy. This guy mm-hmm. burned me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to sue this guy. And I remember one evening at dinner, he says, "Eddie, you got to let it go, man." Mm-hmm. And I was saying, "Don, I don't want to let it go."
Exactly.
I don't want to let it go. This is, you know, this guy messed me over. He said, "Yeah, but you can't win."
Yeah.
You won't win.
Yeah, I often say, you know, don't let them live rent-free in your head. You know, you owe forgiveness as a Christian. Now, trust is a separate issue, and that's where people get have a stumbling block. They think if they forgive them, they have to trust them again. They don't want to trust them. You shouldn't trust them.
Right.
Trust is earned.
Yeah.
You know?
But that... it really got to me, and so I listened to Don, mm-hmm. and I let it go. And it's interesting, once I let it go, everything turned out okay, and mm-hmm. I moved on,
yeah.
and God blessed me again. He said, "God will bless you." Oh, and then there's this other, I have to tell this one more story. I can't reveal the names, or I won't reveal the names or anything. Mm-hmm. But it was a Christian group, a band, and one of the people in the band, I won't say the position or anything. But anyway, this person in the band got replaced mm-hmm. by one of the people in the band who owned the band, basically. And so we were on a plane. I think we were flying to Sweden or somewhere. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we were on a plane, not mm-hmm. a train. I can't remember. Anyway, and we're sitting there, and I was hearing the story about how he got shafted out of the group. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying, "Oh, that's all right. God will get him."
Yeah.
You know, and his response was this. Now, listen to this. This is pretty amazing. He said, "You know what, Eddie?" He said, "That's just it. I don't think he will." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, if God has to forgive me for everything I've done in my life, God has to forgive him too. And darn it, he gets away with it again."
Oh!
And I'm sitting there going,
See?
That's true. I mean, not in that, not necessarily with that attitude about it, that he gets away with it, they get away with it again. But it is true that, let's say, you do something to me. Mm-hmm. You burn me, or you betray me, mm-hmm. Whatever you do, mm-hmm. and I'm hurt, mm-hmm. and I have to forgive you. Mm-hmm. I forgive you. But somewhere deep down, I'm relying on the fact that vengeance is mine, saith the Lord.
Yeah.
But if I'm a true believer and truly wanting to walk in the Lord, I also have to ask God to forgive you and trust that God will forgive you for what you have done to me.
Right.
Whew.
Well, that,
see,
yeah.
that's the ultimate step. So think about that in your personal life, because there are times, I mean, I know just being human in my own life that I have forgiven people with the little bit of thought in the back of my head that God's going to get them.
Well, yeah, let me respond to what you said, sir, because you said a lot here. And I just would simply go to the story of David and Bathsheba, because it led to David. His corruption just got worse and worse, and he had Bathsheba's husband murdered, set up a war battle situation to where he told the army commander, abandon him,
right,
so that he dies.
Set him out,
okay,
and back away. Right.
Now, did God forgive David? Yes, we read in Scripture he did. Did David suffer as a result? Yes. The child Bathsheba had with David died. Because there's a principle, whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. That is a spiritual principle.
Right.
And in the natural, there will be, you reap what you sow.
Right, but you see, Bathsheba's husband, I can't remember his name right now. Anyway, he didn't get an opportunity to forgive or say, God, get David.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to that, Eddie, is it really doesn't involve us how God deals with them. We don't have to pray God punish them. We don't have to pray God forgive them.
No, it's not. It's not how we pray or how we, it's our attitude. So for what I'm saying is there, I've had it in my mind that somewhere back that I trust that God's going to get you.
Well, so, that God would do what you want God to do.
You're gonna get yours. I'm gonna let it go. I give it up, but God's gonna get you.
Right.
And, you know what I mean? It's kind of a double mindedness.
Well, it's okay. Now, who's God here?
Am I really forgiving?
Yeah,
I'm gonna let it go. But God's gonna get you.
You're playing God when you start trying to tell God, because what does the scripture say? Vengeance is mine, says the Lord.
Right.
You say, God, I leave it to your judgment how to deal with him.
Right.
And if you can do that, you can make it.
That's the attitude right there. I leave it to you on how you're going to deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
I forgive him. I let it go. Mm-hmm. And now, boy, we're not even getting to the news. This is one of the spiritual ones now.
Yeah.
Okay, so this
we're talking to you, Mayfield.
Baker, Cliff. No, this is the thing about forgiveness.
Yeah.
Okay. I have found in my life with forgiveness, it's not about forgiveness. It's about forgetfulness. Like, I know people who will forgive, but they don't forget.
Right.
I personally am the type of person that forgets, and in the forgetting is the forgiveness. So I thank God that I forget.
However God helps you, that's great.
Yeah, because to me it would be hard to forgive if I can't forget.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, does that make sense, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
So, and it talks about what the sea of forgetfulness. Is that actually in the scripture? Is that something somebody made up?
No, it's actually in, I believe it's a psalm.
Okay. I think I tried to find it one day. I think he removes our sin as far as the east is from the west, but the sea of forgetfulness is something I think somebody
good
made
point.
Up.
Good yeah. point.
Anyway, but nevertheless, I think it is something that God does not remember our sins. He does truly let them go. They're gone through the blood, and they're washed away. But we tend to hold on to them. But I, for some reason, I am able to forget them because I know people that have done things in the past, and I truly am. And I see them years later, and I don't even remember why I was mad or what happened. Or for example, a great example, my wife and I, we can have a knockdown drag out one day, and I wake up the next morning, and I don't even remember what it was about.
Yeah.
You know, we just go on, you know, and I think, oh, man, thank you, Lord, because that's such a, in a way, it's such a blessing to not have to wake up and still there, oh, there she is again, but, you know, she did this to me, or I did it, you know, to wake up still mad about something, and it always ends up in the end being something dumb, you know, like, you know, she didn't close this door, or she didn't, or she accused me of this, or she, you know. Whatever it is, you know, to be able to have that ability to forget, and the forgiveness is in. It's like when you forget, it's like you wrap something in this. It truly is. You throw it into this thing, an incinerator. Let's use it, or like a magician saying,
"Yeah,
it's gone, and you're free. You don't have to worry about it. I can talk to you again." Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, if you do something. We do something to each other, and then we see each other next time. I don't ever remember anything that you may have done that I may have been offended by.
Yeah,
and I'm sure there has been something.
Yeah,
but that I think is how God really wants us to be, rather than, oh, I forgive you, Dave. And in my mind, just don't you ever do that again.
Well, you know? Yeah, but
I'm just waiting for you to do it
but
again.
But see, when you say don't you ever do that, that is, I want to trust you again. Because remember, trust is separate from forgiveness. It's also, not only do I forgive you, I want to get back to that place where I can trust you again.
Yeah, but you can't, but see, even there, you can't worry about it. The trust is something that's on our part.
Yes.
And I don't, in other words, if you truly forgive, then the trust should be there.
I'm sorry, there are people I don't trust, nor should I. In fact, Scripture tells us within the church, there's certain people that are not ready to be trusted in certain areas of leadership.
Chapter and verse.
Do not promote a novice, lest he be filled up in pride.
Right, but that's not trust based on any action. That's trust on somebody not having ever proven themselves able to pull something.
Trust is earned. That's my point. Trust is earned.
Right.
You know.
Don't you love these little discussions? Yeah. See, we argue these points out here so you don't have to do it at home.
That's right.
No, seriously. I mean, We chase these rabbits because there's no way we plan to talk about this. I don't even know how Baker Mayfield. Thank you, Baker.
And listen, meanwhile, my wife's been telling Eddie, thank you for saying that to him. And Eddie's wife's telling me, thank you for saying that. Somebody's got to talk to us.
Yeah.
But you know, the other thing, it's you feel the pain when you're the victim. More than the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And that's where we need to pray, God, don't let me have a hard heart. Let me have empathy.
Yeah.
So that I'm sensitive to realize when I hurt. Mm-hmm. Unintentionally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, it has to be that way. You know, and it's like that. I'm going to get to the, you know, let's take it to a broader thing. Trust racially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll expand it.
Yeah.
As interpersonal to interracial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been hurt in racial situations.
Mm-hmm.
And, but in the end, when you boil it down, it's still an individual. Those individuals have just been polluted by their upbringing,
yeah,
their environment, etc. Okay, and tragically, today the problem is more in the minority communities, mm-hmm, than it is in the white community. Sure. Let's say, because yeah, the white community has now been painted with this scarlet letter. Mm-hmm. Okay, the scarlet letter of instead of an S, scarlet S, it's the R. Mm-hmm. All right, and so black people look at every white person as a racist, mm-hmm, until you prove themselves. And in some cases, a white person can never prove themselves. And in many cases now, black people don't want them to prove themselves because they enjoy, mm, they enjoy being able to hold that over them,
yeah,
for their own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I can convince you or your race in, yes, general, that you're a bunch of racists, mm, it works to my benefit because I can milk it for some special
milk
privileges.
Milk it or just retain my condescension.
Yeah.
Just too. Wanting to be condescending. I'm
right.
better than you.
I'm better than you, right, yeah, because you're the racist, mm, even though I'm the real racist now.
Right.
But I don't see it.
I mean, it happened in my town where, depending on what side of the tracks you lived on, what neighborhood you're from. You know, if you're from the rich part of town, you're better than the poor folk.
Yeah.
You know?
There you go. See, that's it. Something really came to me, and this is after I finished my book. I really, if you haven't read the book, or buy the book for a friend.
It's a launching pad to get you ready, prep you for this show, because he goes on and on.
But there's a show on PBS. Mm-hmm. It's actually a Hallmark show, mm-hmm, that came. It's called Poldark.
Oh,
Poldark, a British show.
Yeah,
and it shows what it was like around Revolutionary War times. This guy, he served in the British Army, mm-hmm, in America, but it was after the war. He goes back home, mm, and he comes from the noble class.
Okay.
But it shows this class division in Britain.
Oh, it's horrible. Oh, it still is.
Oh, yeah. They had the paupers prison, mm-hmm, like the debtors
yep,
jail. And if you owed people money, they could throw you in jail, yep, and they could make it so that you couldn't pay them back. And mm-hmm, it was bad.
Yep.
But it just showed that, and there was race had nothing to do with it.
No, it was economic class.
It was economic class. And the classism, mm-hmm, was as bad or worse than any racism.
Right.
They were killing people, jailing people, just abusing people.
Yeah.
Raping women. I mean, anything they wanted to do, they could take your children. They could do what they wanted. The noble class,
yeah,
to the lower, and the main bad guy in the, mm-hmm, in the show was a guy named George.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, I was reading some British literature.
David, you gotta let me finish.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're still talking.
Okay. I'm still talking.
I thought you'd made your point there.
No, okay. No. Anyway, I just gotta finish. So this guy, George, he always talked about people needing to respect their betters.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before. You need to learn how to respect and treat your betters.
Yes.
And so they would, in the court proceedings, mm-hmm, they talked about their betters. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't from that class, you weren't one of the betters. You were the worsers or something like that. So anyway, now I'm done.
Yeah, it's just the British literature I was reading this week, they referred to England as the cradle of civilization. And I thought, if that kind of class warfare and bigotry is civilization, I want savagery. I mean, because out in the wild, everybody's on the same footing.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. In fact, my wife and I just got through watching Vikings.
Yes.
The Netflix version, mm-hmm. Valhalla, Vikings Valhalla. Mm-hmm. And it talked about this where they came down, and I didn't even realize that there was a Viking king that actually took over and was the king of England.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I can't remember what his name
was. They did have a Viking king.
Yeah, yes. He was the Viking king. He was the king of England. Mm-hmm. So it was crazy. And what was going on up there, you know, where they were killing each other. And then it got into the Christian Vikings versus the pagan Vikings. Mm-hmm. And the Christians were killing the pagans, and the pagans were fighting the Christians, and I mean, there's so much stuff we don't know about, and it shows the dark side of Christianity.
Yeah,
how bad it was that they were just killing and burning and raping and pillaging, and it just like
one of the best movies on that point was called Kingdom of Heaven about the Crusades.
Right, I saw that one.
You know, and the arrogance of the Europeans, in England. In fact, in my childhood, I saw it firsthand, the enmity between the Protestants and the Catholics, particularly in Northern Ireland. Two kids from Northern Ireland were sent over to my hometown for a summer to get away from the fighting. This is in 72, I think it was.
Were they both Protestant, both Catholic?
No, that was a funny thing. Yeah, it was a Catholic girl, or a Catholic boy and a Protestant girl, and they became good friends. My hometown, and I got invited to some things because I kind of became his best friend. I lived a block away. Tony McLarnon was his name. And anyway, but it still exists today. Now, it's kind of simmered down, but remember the Irish Republican Army, the terrorists, you know? And, I mean, it was so ingrained in England, they treated all Catholics terrible. I mean, they despised Italians. Why? Because they're papists, you know. And that actually came to the United States. We had something called the Blaine Amendment, almost became part of our Constitution. And it was particularly moved by the Speaker of the House to try to suppress the Catholics that were coming over to our Protestant nation. Because we didn't really become prominently, significantly Catholic until the big waves of immigration at the end of the 1800s and early 1900s.
Yeah, yeah. It's throughout history, you know, the whole battle between, you know, Catholics ruled mm-hmm. up until about the 1600s, 1700s, when Protestantism came about, John Knox and Calvinism and Luther came out, mm-hmm. and slowly it caught on, you know, and then it grew pretty quickly in England. Ooh, it was really bad in England, you know, but it grew quickly. Yeah. I guess when was it Henry VIII, King Henry? Or no, James. I'm sorry, it was James.
Yeah, James is a better example of Protestant Christianity than Henry VIII. And he was a lecher.
But even James, though, James, you know, the story is he wanted a divorce, so that's when he decided that he would leave, you know, and start his own.
Well, I thought that's what King Henry VIII did. Started and made himself head of the church. King of England today is still the head of that.
Yeah, but no, I think that was James. And that's where that's where we get the King James Bible from. Hmm. That's why we have the King James Bible. He decided he was going to write his own Bible instead of the Latin. He had Shakespeare and some other translated into. Boy, we are way off. I mean, we're into this. Hopefully,
it's your fault, Baker Mayfield.
Hopefully you all are enjoying our little discussions here. But let's get into some news. The big news of the week, I guess, was this shooter.
In Maine.
Robert Card was his name. Here's what gets me. Okay, he was actually a shooting instructor. He taught people how to shoot, but he was crazy. This is what they try to not let you know, that he was hearing voices, and he had just been released from, I guess, an asylum or an asylum or something.
Mental health facility. Mental health.
Thank you for. I'm stuck in old school, yeah. But anyway, and
the crazy part,
right? Yeah, but he was hearing voices. Mm-hmm. And he decided to go on a shooting spree and kill a lot of people.
Yeah, I heard 16.
16 or 16?
16 dead so far,
and
20-some injured that they know of.
Right.
Because they just found his body last
night. Yeah. Apparently he had a self-inflicted wound.
That's right here.
And, but he had people worried because, and they weren't all killed in the same place. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, there was a shooting in Australia back in the turn of the century there. Biggest shooting they had. But what people don't often report, everybody thinks they call it a mass shooting, but the one in Australia, which I think it had like maybe in the teens or in the 20s, but he went to like three or four locations and shot multiple people in each location, and it would take off and go do it again. Kind of reminds me, do you remember the one... it was in Maryland, and then they would travel. It was an older man, and he had a boy with him.
Wasn't that the one shooting out of the trunk of his car?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah.
He killed multiple people, and it was sniper, and he was shooting out of the trunk of his car.
They had a fake gas cap flip.
Mm-hmm.
They rerouted that, and then he would flip that open and stick the barrel out. And the guy who was actually doing the shooting, he had his kid driving, sitting there in the driver's seat. And he would, you know, and it would somewhat suppress the sound. And then off they go. And nobody found, that haunted, I think it was D.C. area.
Maryland. And D.C. Yeah, it was scary.
And for a long time.
Took him a long time.
Yep. And I want to say the places where the carnage happened were places that either the proprietor had dictated by law, it's a gun-free zone, or by statute, nobody's allowed to carry any, self-defense. Firearms particularly. But this made a target-rich environment that he sought out.
And so what do the Democrats do?
They want to make more gun-free zones. My thing is, when you take away something, somebody's liberty, their right of self-defense, you have a moral duty to compensate that with taking responsibility to protect them. If Secret Service is going to say, hey, we got the president here, fine, then I want to see a big, massive bunch of Secret Service here all armed.
Right.
Because I want to feel safe.
Well, and usually you do.
Yeah.
I mean, in a president's case.
Exactly.
And see, this is the hypocrisy to me of the entertainment and media people. You can't go, you just try to go to KRMG to... KJRH,
the media,
any of the channel 2, 6, 8, 23, any of those places in town, you try to go in there,
mm-hmm.
It's not happening. They've got the security, they've got bulletproof glass, you can't just go in there, all right? But our schools, they're somewhat secure, but they don't have, screen for the kids. They don't have, even D.C., you have to go through metal detectors and things like that to protect our congresspeople and things like that. Mm-hmm. And we're always talking about our our children are our most precious gifts and all of that, you know. But we don't really take care. Here's the other funny thing. You don't hear about mass killings in the black community. In the schools. Why? Because everybody's packing. You're just trying to shoot up. You may shoot one person and you're dead.
My grandpa said something similar to that. He says, you know why you don't see very many crimes happening in the RV parks in Florida where all the snowbirds go? Because they've all got shotguns in their RV. Yeah, yeah. My grandpa told me that, and he was an RVer, snowbird. Mm-hmm. And he said, man, I thought I was the only one doing it. And everybody packs
a shotgun. In the hood. No, in the hood, you're not going to see.
And that's just it. They want a controlled environment where there's no unknown variables or as few as possible. I mean, even what happened in the beginning of the football season this year, high schools, we had some shootings.
Right.
Two or three places on the first Friday night.
Yeah.
And you think you're safe in there. Listen, a kid can tuck something right next to the chain link fence from the outside under the turf and then just reach out. You know, you're not safe, folks, unless you've got the right to defend yourself.
Well, even this, just to me, a high school football game is one of the easiest targets in the world, mm-hmm. because all you have to do is wait outside till the game's finished.
Yeah.
Even if you can't sneak something in, you wait till everybody's flooding out.
Right.
Right at the gates.
Mm-hmm.
You just wait, in a car or a truck till everybody's coming in. And can you imagine, like where there's a mass coming through one of the gates?
Oh, God, they can just spray and hit.
My goodness. Do.
Every bullet take out two or three.
Because it'll go through.
Yeah.
Through and yeah. I mean, I'm not giving anybody any ideas. But I'm just thinking about it. It just it's crazy,
Yeah.
But
and you know they're not armed because they just went through metal detectors,
right?
To get in.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like shoot me, I'm defenseless.
Gun free zone.
Yeah.
Right.
For cowards only.
Yeah. So, but of course, the Democrats are. Here's the fact, okay? Here's the real reason. I think we've mentioned this before. The only reason Democrats want to take your gun is so they can take your guns.
Yeah.
And they want to take your guns so they can be in charge. I promise you, the ultimate goal of the Democrat Party is the goal of the Nazi Party, the goal of the Communist Party, to one day totally control you, totally rule over you,
yep.
to where you have no ability to rise up and defend yourself against their ultimate plan. That's all it is. They do not want any insurrection against their coming plans for you. That's what it is. They are intent on evil. That's what it is. And I'm going to put it out there. I'm just going to tell you that's what they want to do. They want to take your ability to defend your liberty from you and your neighbors, okay? That's the only reason. A government that is set on liberty of the individual and ruling righteously has nothing to fear. And if they will set laws properly, law enforcement properly, they are not afraid. The people that are afraid are the ones that are trying to take away your right to defend yourself.
I want to say that effort globally got set back 3 weeks ago when a bunch of people in paragliders landed in Israel. Because back in the 80s, if you lived anywhere close to either the West Bank or Gaza, every adult, male particularly, in Israel, had a machine gun, had an automatic rifle. Now, because of little regulations chipping away, they'd had to get a license, they had to apply for in order to have a gun. And the net result is hardly any civilians had guns when Hamas raided.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Right. The civilians did not fight back. They were unarmed. And especially, you know, the music festival down there near Gaza, they didn't allow arms there. You know, and so this is a problem.
Bunch of liberals.
Yes.
Yeah, bunch of liberals, yeah, running a music festival.
I mean, I hate to say it, you religious right who's so pro-Israel, but Israel's government is rather leftist, okay? They just are.
Well, I think it was probably the government. Remember when they kicked Netanyahu out for a few years there?
Yeah.
And what is the, not the Likud, the party that came
Labor.
In. Labor came right in and they took control.
Perez and then Ehud Olmert.
Right, the ones who basically, their version of the Democrats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they were even further left, even further socialist.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Likud party, they call it the conservative party, but by our standards, they're to the left of the classic Democrats here. So, yeah, that's the problem. You know, and I put up a meme showing all these paragliders coming. I said, some mornings you need an AR-15 to go hunting.
To go hunting.
Yeah, because what does Biden say? You don't need a machine gun and a 30, bullet magazine.
30 capacity.
Yeah, to go hunting. Well, depends what you're hunting.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what? On October 7th, if you were in Israel, you were seriously hunting.
Well,
because you were the hunted.
Yeah, it depends on, that's what I was going to say, if you're the hunting or hunted.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, that's where I'm getting. Remember the riots after Rodney King's, the verdict against the cops?
Yeah,
and
they
said,
LA.
No, this is not premeditated murder, attempted murder. And all of a sudden, South Central L.A. and the Koreans were not victimized,
right,
because the shop owners, the Korean shops, they stood on top of the roofs with guns.
Right.
And Rush Limbaugh said, this set back gun control 30 years.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Because sometimes you can't trust the government. Listen, you can never trust the cops to protect you. You call them, they take, file a report of the crime, standing over your blood spattered body.
Yeah.
You know, they're not.
And they always have an excuse for why they didn't get there earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. They claim they're there to protect you.
No.
There aren't enough of them to protect us.
No, they're not. And with all of the new rules, and they're pretty much handcuffed, and they're shorthanded because the old guard of the police are retiring in mass,
yeah,
and they're not able to get any the new ones they're getting. Half of them are more concerned about their sexual orientation and their freedom to be who they are, really,
yeah,
you know, and then what they're supposed to do,
yep,
you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, hey, the other big news, of course, we have a speaker.
Yes, we do.
We have a speaker at last. Thank God Almighty, a speaker at last. So, yeah, it's Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson.
Mm-hmm. I like your Babylon Bee take on it. Everybody's wondering, who is he?
Exactly. His family is surprised.
His family, that he's a congressman.
Yeah, his family is shocked to find out. Yeah. I've known about him a few years because I watch Fox Business a lot. I wake up every day to Fox and Maria Bartiromo and some of the others have him on a lot. And he's a very intelligent. You'd never know he's from Louisiana because he has no drawl, no
That's true.
Accent.
Yeah,
but he's a very, very smart guy.
You know, he spent some time in the media too.
Did he?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they didn't go into detail on it, but he has done some media work.
Yeah, but he's a real sharp. In fact, the position that Kevin Hearn has now, that was his position before Kevin Hearn.
Right.
What? So he's a financial guy,
An attorney.
Yeah, an attorney. Mm-hmm. And what's funny, I saw this morning that they're coming after him. In fact, there was a press conference when they were they had all the Congress people around him. They were all excited, and some reporter is going after him. You know, and here's the clue on what they're getting ready to attack you when the reporter says, "What do you say to those?"
Oh God.
What do you say to those who say
drive-by hit coming here?
Yeah, you were involved in the you were too slow in your response, or you had no response on the January 6th, insurrection. That's what was. That that you were agreed with, or you were involved in the January 6th insurrection or something like that, you know. And there's this older, I don't know who it is, probably looked like the oldest member of Congress, this little old lady, white, and she said, "Oh, just shut up." This lady, this little old lady standing next to Mike Johnson, she says, "Oh, just shut up." And everybody around him just started boo, yelling, and they said, "Next," and they just shut her right out of there, you know, and went to the next question. And that's the perfect response. I mean, I think with him there now, I think the Congress has finally decided we're not playing your game anymore. Mm-hmm. I think they finally grew a pair, as they say, and. So I think, you know, people may have a real problem with Matt Gaetz.
Yeah.
And may not have liked the way the whole process played out and everything. But in the end, I think it really has worked out well.
It is. And Matt Gaetz, after the vote, he revealed the real problem why it took 3 weeks. It was Kevin McCarthy. He put poison pills in every vote. He first derailed Scalise. So he never got, because he got a bunch of his own supporters, people who had been his allies, to vote against him. They would vote for somebody else. You know, they got the New Yorkers to all vote for, Zeldin.
Right.
And then got other people to vote for McCarthy and other people, you know, somebody else, enough so that Scalise could never get close to 217. And then they did it 3 times with Jordan. And it wasn't the, quote, 8, other than Ken Buck, the leftist who voted with the other 7, Freedom Caucus people. But the Freedom Caucus people always voted for whoever the nominee of the caucus was, or of the conference. So, and Matt Gaetz pointed out, somebody made a motion when they finally agreed on Ammer. They said, okay, while we're here, so we don't start this process over, if he doesn't get it, then we're putting up Mike Johnson. And they said, well, the rules don't allow it. So the guy said, okay, I'm asking unanimous consent approval for it. One person objected, Kevin McCarthy. But he lost out. It happened so fast. McCarthy could not line up opposition. Mm. And so Matt Gaetz said, he went up to Scalise. He says, now you know who blocked you from becoming speaker. Mm. You know? And it's obvious. Yeah. It's obvious. McCarthy couldn't get. And then the other big loser in this is all of the lobbyists who have IOUs from Kevin McCarthy that they can't collect anymore. Yeah, because it's a new game, folks.
Yeah,
a new game. And I'm just impressed. The man is, you know, at least his creed is I'm a Christian first and then a constitutionalist. And, you know, Of course, if you listen to the media, he's a white nationalist.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. One thing, you know.
A Christian nationalist. Yeah,
Donald Trump now has someone to share the ammo with, receiving the ammo, you know. Yeah. He better wear body armor because they're going to come after him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, these, you know, if you haven't awakened yet, I hope you will awaken soon to see how dirty, how truly dirty the Democrat Party is. Mm-hmm. I make no excuses. I don't pull my punches. I call them the Democrats. All you need to do is put an N in the middle of that, and they're not Democrats. You put an N after the E-O, and it's Democrats, because they are about as filthy and evil as it comes. Anybody that, I'm not saying the rank and file, the people at home are not necessarily, that are voting for them, are not necessarily evil. I think they're deceived. But the leadership, anybody in office or running for office in the Democrat Party, I believe, are tainted and evil. And I will say that proudly and loudly. So I'm just going to, because you cannot be running for office and winning in that party and not know what corruption you're up against and involved in.
So the, quote, insurrection of January 6, 2021 is not the most recent insurrection. The most recent one was spearheaded by Rashid Tlaib in her decrying that the Israelis bombed a hospital and killed 500 people. That was followed by 300 people getting arrested occupying congressional office buildings. 300 people got arrested. Now let's see what their trials look like.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's an insurrection if we define it by what the January 6th committee defines.
Yeah, the January 6th people just went in and walked out.
Most of them were invited in.
Yeah. That's right, because we have the video of them being invited in.
Now, there were some criminals, but those criminals started fighting the police and bashing windows while Trump was still speaking a half mile away.
Right, right.
So the Trump supporters are still at the speech.
Right, yeah.
And the infiltrators and FBI informants, and, you know, that's who was guilty.
Right. Speaking of the Israel thing, by the way, they found that hospital that was supposed to have been attacked was sitting on top of the largest terror base.
Okay.
It was beneath, underneath.
Watch that. I believe that's a different hospital. The largest hospital in Gaza is sitting on top of the Hamas terrorists.
Yeah. Right.
But this hospital that got the bomb in the parking lot was an Armenian hospital.
Oh, okay. It was a different hospital.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, I assumed what you did, too, and I dug a little deeper and I found out.
Okay, but still, nevertheless, that it wasn't Israeli rockets that hit the hospital or in the parking lot.
Right.
It was their own.
Yeah, Broken Arrow. Their own. That's what they call it in the military when you have a missile misfires.
Right.
It's called a Broken Arrow.
So, yeah. Anyway, but yeah, there's so much misinformation, misinformation.
Yeah, and journalistic laziness.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
That's just, in fact, I quote of the day was this morning. I was watching ABC News on their Roku channel, and this woman's complaining to a former Israeli military guy about the denial of civil rights to people in Gaza because the internet's been cut off, keeping mothers from posting to social media. And what does this man have to say about this atrocity? And he said, well, the intention is not to harm any civilians, but, you know, we are trying to shut off the ability of the enemy to communicate.
Right.
And if other people are inconvenienced, so be it. But this ABC anchor, that was the number one thing she had, is that grandma can't post pictures to Facebook.
You know, and what's so weird is, you know, at these riots, you've got now all of these American college students wearing these Palestinian checkered head coverings and all, and they have no idea. I mean, you know, you ask them. In fact, I don't know if you've seen some of the interviews where they're asking these protesters questions, and they have no idea. They don't even know what's. They can't even answer the questions. They're just out there spewing stuff about Israel, genocide, and all of the this that Israel's doing, and they ask him a question about the, you know, Hamas and all. In fact, the one girl, she kept talking about Hamas.
Yeah. You know?
Well, you know, well, it was a black girl, you know. Well, I'm out here supporting Hamas, you know, and he's like, who? Hamas, you know, and the reporter, she was trying hard to just keep her straight. It was a CNN reporter. It wasn't even a Fox person, you know. It was just really funny. But these people are just making fools of themselves. Yeah. They know that. They just want to be involved because they think it's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's the cool thing because it's anti-establishment. And again, I say the thing that's funny to me is, was it about 6 months ago, 9 months ago, when the big news was Trump and Kanye were anti-Semitic?
Mm-hmm.
But when in reality, they weren't anti-Semitic at all. They were anti, what would you call it? Oh, it's my phone. Excuse me.
No, it's
you're
fine.
Wondering what that was.
Barely anybody. I would be sure it wasn't me.
No, they were anti the, not media.
Well, it was a business group.
It's a business.
Particularly Adidas, he was really upset at.
Well, yeah, but it's the people, the control. There's a Jewish, I want to say mafia, but it's not really mafia. It's just, what do you call it, a group? A conglomerate.
Yeah.
The people who control. Syndicate.
Yeah.
A syndicate.
Corner of the market, much like the De Beers Diamond people.
Right, exactly. And they control a certain segment of the media.
Yeah.
Even Christian, you know this, the Christian music industry.
Right.
Has been controlled by
secular labels, out the Christian labels.
Right, in secular music labels were controlled by Jewish ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what Kanye was talking about. Mm-hmm. He wasn't talking about the Jews in Israel, the true, what I call true Jews, Hasidim and Sephardic Jews and Orthodox Jews. He wasn't speaking about the religious Jews. He was speaking about people that claim Jewish heritage or whatever, but many of them who are Jew in name only, I would say. Kind of like Rhino.
Yeah, but isn't it a lot like you talk about your black privilege? When it's convenient, the Jews hide behind their nationality.
Yeah.
And claim the victim card.
Yeah.
And like, oh no, you're not criticizing how I screwed you up. You're attacking Jews.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. So that's who Kanye was speaking against. He was speaking more against a certain industrial syndicate, not a people group.
Yeah, it was a form of racketeering that they were trying to do and really succeeded.
Right, right. And so because they control such a large segment of the media.
Mm-hmm.
But now, all of a sudden, we're seeing the true anti-Semitism, and nobody wants to speak out against that. In fact, I just saw a thing with Christian Anamapur. She's just out of control. And she was speaking with the lady, the first lady of Jordan. She was an American.
King Abdullah's wife.
King Abdullah's wife. I forget her name. Princess Noor.
Oh, wait a minute. Is she still up? Because she was married to King Hussein.
Who's King Hussein's wife? Yeah.
Okay.
Princess Noor.
Who's not the mother of King Abdullah because he had remarried Queen Noor.
Right.
Who's an American.
Right. Her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's interviewing Queen Noor.
Yeah.
And she's talking about the American media, Western media is only presenting one side of this, the Israeli side, mm-hmm. and not the other side, mm-hmm. you know, the Palestinian side. But Dave, here's what everybody's really missing in the whole picture. And let me paint this. It's a very simple picture. And I had to paint it for the typros here in Tulsa.
Our favorite people.
Our favorite pizza. What is, there's this one Muslim woman here, and I don't even know if she's really Muslim. I think she's a honky pretending to be a Muslim, or that's just wrong. I know, bad Eddie.
Oh, it happens.
But she's the lady that speaks out for the Muslims here all the time in Tulsa. Uh-huh. Anyway, she got up and she was talking about, you know, the genocide of the Israelis against the racism. It was actually the racism of the Jews against the Palestinians. And I had to point out, I said, wait a minute, time out here. Racism? Are you serious? This is a family feud.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Yeah. It's a family feud. Yeah. It goes back to two people, Isaac and Ishmael.
Yeah, two tribes.
But, well, not just tribes. Mm-hmm. They're brothers of the same father.
That's right. That's what.
I mean, they had the same dad. They just had two different moms.
Right. The 12 tribes were all brothers, too. You know, I mean, the 12 tribes of Israel.
Right. But we're just talking about two boys.
Right.
With the same, of the same father, Ishmael and Isaac. I'm not Isaac. Was it Isaac? Yeah, it was Isaac, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Isaac and Ishmael.
Right. And before that, you had Jacob and Esau.
Esau, right? Yeah, Jacob and Esau. Yeah. Yeah. So the Arabs traced their lineage back to Ishmael and the Jews to Isaac. Mm-hmm. And so Ishmael's people grew up and did their thing, and Isaac's became Jews. And then Ishmael, his people ended up intermingling with Ishmael's people. I'm sorry, Esau's. Mm-hmm. Esau's people joined the party over here with Ishmael, and Isaac's, they stayed pretty much in line. But that's all this is, the same people. I mean, you know, it's like the Johnsons and the Robinsons in Harlem. These guys on this block, and it's the Crips and the Bloods. Mm-hmm. You got the Crips and the Bloods, okay? And let's say the Crips are the Palestinians, and the Bloods are the Jews, right? Mm-hmm. And they just don't like each other. Mm-hmm. They're fighting over turf.
Yeah,
don't call it race. Don't make it something other than it is. And they're both fighting over turf. They're fighting over an area. What I like to say, you know, the people that I like to say, well, Jerusalem is, you know, well, they've got their mosque there. You know, the Muslims have their mosque. I said, well, do you know what's under the mosque? The Temple of Solomon.
Yeah.
Just cause it's like, you know, where's your house? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, what if I tore it down and built my house on top of yours? Mm-hmm. Then whose place is it? You know, just because your house has been there for like 100 years, but 100 years ago, my house was under there.
Yeah.
Whose property is it really? So this is the type of thing that the kids today that are being fed all this stuff don't know.
No, they don't.
They don't know this.
That's the beauty of the Wailing Wall, was when they dug down and they saw stones, they're like, this was part of Solomon's temple. And it was proof that before there was Islam, there was Judaism on this spot. Mm-hmm. And the reason why the Jews particularly are fine with that mosque, the Dome of the Rock, because a devout Jew wouldn't dare stand over the same place where the Holy Holy was, because they believe they'd be struck dead.
Right.
Because anybody who's not ceremonially prepared and qualified, If they're not the high priest, they would be struck dead.
Right.
So that's the beauty of it. Yeah. You know, I want to say the beauty of what Trump did with the Abraham Accords, entitling it to Abraham. He got them all agree. We are all descendants of Abraham. And it's like, let's celebrate what we have in common. That's
interesting. That is interesting. That is true. They are all descendants.
Because you'll always have, when you got a favorite kid, you'll always have the other siblings despising him. Why did Joseph end up being sold as a slave? Because his brothers were jealous of him, right? The same thing with Esau and Jacob. And I remember as a kid one day, my aunt comes over to talk to my dad. She had just found out that their dad gave the entire farm and homestead to the eldest son. And this, the youngest daughter, was furious. And she wanted my dad to join her and just argue and protest and even filing a lawsuit. And my dad just, he stood there right, I was right in the room, and he said to her, he says, I didn't earn that farm. That's their farm. If they give it to, and he mentioned the bachelor who, down the road, if they want to give it to him, that's theirs to give to whoever they want to. Mm-hmm. And he would not fight. And I just was never more proud of my dad than that. Because jealousy and envy are some of the worst things. And that's what's happened. And the reason why I think we have this uprising right now, it was to prevent the Abraham Accords from going into effect at the timeline, because Benjamin Netanyahu, the month before, had gone to the UN and announced we're getting ready to build a pipeline that goes from Saudi Arabia through Israel and goes through the Mediterranean to Europe. And we're going to provide petroleum directly from Saudi Arabia to southern Europe. And Netanyahu was just thrilled because it was a joint venture he's going to get to do.
Right, with Saudi Arabia.
And the Gazans would not let that stand. And that's why I think we have this war now.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff. It's not, and so it's not just the Gazans.
Right.
That means there's other entities that don't want to see that happen.
Oh, I got one more thing to
like
tie
into. Like the Jordanians.
Right, because the Arab Gulf, which the Persians like to call the Persian Gulf, is right now what Saudi Arabia is so dependent on, and it's so vulnerable to attack from Iran. But if they get this pipeline through, now all of a sudden oil will flow from Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Emirates and will not be endangered by Iran.
Yeah. Yep. See, there you go.
There you go.
There we go. You heard it right here on Fresh Black Coffee.
Yeah.
Hey, no, seriously, this is, but overall, just go back to the beginning, okay?
Yeah.
God promised the land to Abraham and to his people.
I got one more thing on this.
That's what you got to go back to.
Oh, I'm sorry. One more thing on this. The real reason why that the ABC News, what would Rush call her, anchorette, Infobabe, whatever, he was so sexist and didn't care. The reason she's mad about all the communications being shut down is all of their correspondents in Gaza who are going to give the Palestinian and Hamas spin, they can't get in contact with.
Right.
And so now Israel gets to set the narrative for the weekend.
Yep.
And you know, you should have bought a satellite phone.
Yeah. And see, the our media has gotten spoiled. Mm-hmm. And just in general, the world's gotten spoiled. And we have forgotten that the first basic premise of war, and that is war is war. Mm-hmm. Israel is now at war.
Yep.
They remember it's war.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like the story. It's so funny that I had just talked about this, what, a couple of months ago, about a pharaoh.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
See, the Palestinians don't want a pharaoh.
No.
But the media and they're wanting to hold Israel to a fair one, mm-hmm. but nobody wants to hold Palestine to a fair one, right? Mm-hmm. So, no, it doesn't work that way. And Israel, to their credit, they're saying, no, you never called a fair one, so we're not going to fight a fair one. Mm-hmm. And for Israel, if Israel capitulates and say, oh, okay, we'll hold the ceasefire because now you've asked for a ceasefire after you've launched rockets, killed people, mm-hmm. taken hostages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We are going to capitulate to your demands, mm-hmm. to your requests. Yes, no, you have lost. You have lost. You have given in to what they have asked for. Mm-hmm. Israel needs to set its own course. Israel needs to say, no, you started it. Now we will finish it like we did in 67, like we did in 73, like we did in, and will continue to do. Every time you get up, every time, that's the only way you can deal with these people. If you try anything else, they will eventually overrun you, and you can't do it. You cannot give in. By the way, there's one more thing here. Okay. This is, you'll love this. It kind of relates. After two rounds of high-level international talks in Copenhagen and in Jeddah, Ukraine is gathering partners for a rally for peace in Malta on October 28th and 29th.
Malta, that's in...
the Mediterranean.
That's right, yeah.
Okay. National security advisors will be discussing President Zelensky's 10-point peace formula addressing everything. Get this. This is what's so good. This is so new agey. He will be addressing everything from child abductions to environmental damage. Jake Sullivan, the White House National Security Advisor, took part in a similar summit in Saudi Arabia in August.
Yeah.
Russian Foreign Minister, Russia's Foreign Ministry called the gathering counterproductive, saying it has absolutely no perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it wasn't our idea. We don't control it. Therefore, it's...
Well, no, but more than that, I mean, look, you're talking about a peace summit, right? To supposedly, I guess, deal with what are we going to do here with this war in Ukraine, mm-hmm. right, or anywhere else. And they're talking about child abductions and then environmental damage?
Yeah.
Come on. I mean, you know where that's headed.
Oh, of course.
You know, it's all the buzzwords, all the new age buzzwords.
It's the same reason why they had one of their press people being some transgender, a 6'3" guy wearing a bob haircut and eyeliner and trying to pass himself off as a woman with a deep baritone voice. Oh, they tried.
Ukraine?
Ukraine did that a month ago. And I thought, this is a joke. And somehow they think it'll appeal to the West. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but you've just insulted my, you know, sense of decency here.
And the Russians are going, ha, ha, ha. Yeah. Like Eddie Murphy did, ha, ha, I laugh at you.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, people's lives, millions of lives are at stake.
Yeah.
And they're pulling this crap. I mean, this is, come on, people.
Yeah.
Come on.
And by the way, the reason why I did a double take when you mentioned Malta, I thought of World War II where the Allies met in Yalta.
Oh, Yalta, yeah.
Which is in the Crimea. And I'm like, what is Ukraine doing trying to do something in Crimea? Because that's very much under Russian control.
The Maltese Falcon.
So just Yalta and Malta are two different places.
Yalta and Malta.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yalta went to Malta?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, this is like crazy. I don't know what's going on. I mean, it's... The world is ready to explode, and which takes me a massive devil comet. It's got an ice volcano and horns. It's getting ready. It's It's hurtling towards Earth.
Does it have a red pitchfork, though?
Well, yeah, really. It's hurtling towards Earth, and it's supposed to light up our skies. Now, my question is, a couple of things come to mind. Mm-hmm. What if it hit the Earth?
It's not even going anywhere close to a trajectory to the Earth. It's coming closer to the Earth, but it's like saying a tornado from Amarillo that's heading towards Wichita is coming towards Tulsa. Yeah, it will be nearer to Tulsa, but it is not in a trajectory to hit us or even come close.
Well, yet.
Yeah, you know.
No, the reason I say it's the devil, and I was thinking about, are you familiar with Wormwood?
Yeah, from Screwtape.
No, no, not that one. In Revelation.
Oh, that's right. It was something was named Wormwood, yeah.
Yeah, there's supposed to be an asteroid or something. It's going to crash into the ocean.
That's right. And be toxic. It'll destroy.
Kill a third of the
sea
life.
That's true. So that is a pronounced judgment coming from the skies.
Right. And I just thought about it. The devil comet and his devil at Wormwood. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis, Wormwood. Anyway, I just try to put the two together, maybe.
No, I think
prophetically.
Now all of a sudden, I'm taking you more seriously.
Ah.
You know, because you remember that Sandra Bullock movie where she's trapped in outer space?
Yeah.
And remember, it's because of space debris.
Yeah, it hit her.
And so the crazy thing about it is when one thing up in this in space hits something else, now all of a sudden all bets are off because chain reaction. And everything's on new trajectories.
Right.
In fact, that was part of our idea of last time we talked about serious threat of an asteroid is let's hit it with some kind of a missile to get it to perhaps bounce off. In fact, the movie Armageddon is let's go land on it and blow it up.
Nuclear bombs on it.
To disintegrate it, and then we might get hit with some of the debris, but not the whole mass.
Right.
So, it's interesting. And, you know, we've been on Earth for how many eons, and it's only now that we have the technology to be aware of what could almost hit us, right? Mm-hmm. In fact, some people are saying perhaps that was part of the judgment when the flood of Noah came. You know, and we see even in, if you go to Siberia, you'll see where some massive asteroids have hit the Earth. Massive. You know, we saw, what was it, 20 years ago, where an asteroid hit Jupiter. And they actually knew it was going to happen, and they saw the explosion on Jupiter through microscopes. And so it's real. We've seen it happen to our biggest planet in our solar system. So this is real.
No, I know.
We've observed it in our day, you know, on other planets. So
yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, the devil comet is coming. So anyway, here's a little something. Marie Osmond is doubling down in her refusal to leave her inheritance to her kids. She says self-worth cannot be bought. And she is joining Ashton Kutcher and Daniel Craig, James Bond himself, who echoed the belief of not leaving their children an inheritance. So it's a growing thing now among the wealthy, many of the wealthy and in entertainment, to not leave an inheritance to their kids, to make their kids earn it the hard way.
What about while they're here? How much assistance they give their kids with college?
That I don't know. I mean, that's probably, maybe, you know, now, maybe this is a scare tactic. Mm-hmm. Or, see, that's the way I would do it. That the way you prepare it, that you tell them, I'm not giving you anything, you know, you have to earn it.
Yeah.
And make them then work towards it. And then as they prove themselves. You know, they go to college, yeah. they get a job, they do this, and then you know, you can have it down the
road. Yeah, I've been able to, over the years, interact with some of Sam Walton's family. A little bit more extended, nephews, you know. Very well off, because they're enjoying the benefits of being associated. But in his book, Made in America, Sam wrote one book, and it's a masterpiece. I recommend it on so many levels, for business, personal integrity, personal growth. In fact, I was going to Church on the Move at the time. Willie George bought a copy for everybody on his staff. That's how much he believed there was so much to learn from that. But at the end, he talked about that his kids won't get the opportunity that he had. And I think he realized that wealth is also somewhat of a hindrance. Remember John Paul Getty, former Tulsan. One of his kids, news came out he's kidnapped. Mm-hmm. Some say it was a ploy to fake a kidnapping to get some of Dad's money. And Dad paid the ransom, but then deducted it from his kid's inheritance. Yeah. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't going to make, you know, because they never did find out. It was this, was he in on it, you know? Was it a way to scam Dad?
But did they, like, cut his finger off or something? Was it his finger or his ear or something?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I seem to remember, because they sent him as proof that they actually had him there. But, yeah, that's a tricky, it's a tricky thing, the whole inheritance game, and especially for the wealthy. It would be tough. You know, I think of the Kennedys, for example, you know, John Kennedy and John and Carolyn. Mm-hmm. They had two kids, Carolyn.
Two that made it, yeah. They had miscarriage.
And so you have John who, Carolyn apparently, I think she was just purely a trust fund. She grew up totally sheltered. She never, as far as I know, never had a job. Mm-hmm. I think she may have worked.
She did pass the bar.
Right. But I don't know. She never, I don't know wherever she worked or practiced law or anything, married into wealth or whatever. Whereas John worked in New York City, you know, rode a bike into town, hung out with people.
He worked for the DA's office.
Right. And he and Donald Trump apparently were very good friends.
Yeah.
And just a two different people, and now you have Carolyn's son, who is kind of like Ronald Reagan's son, Ron Reagan, who, you know what he turned out. That's what Carolyn's son is, reminds me of, the things I've read and heard him saying. Yeah. And he now has attacked Bobby Jr.
Yeah.
You know, he's the antithesis. He's the exact opposite, and he's attacks him, doesn't like him. And, you know, he has become basically your modern-day socialist Democrat.
Yeah. You know? Spoiled brat, too.
Spoiled brat, exactly.
And that's where I'm going with this, because I don't understand, you know, what the whole reasoning behind what Maria Osmond's doing. But
you don't understand it, or you do?
I would like more information. If you don't want your kid turned into a spoiled brat, that's an honorable thing.
But there's other ways of doing it.
Well, what I'm saying is, as long as you've been consistent through their life.
Yeah, right.
Now, some things are unavoidable, because when you are the child of somebody wealthy, they are a target that they didn't ask to be, such as the Getty kidnapping. Or Charles Lindbergh's kid being kidnapped and killed. They have to take extra effort to protect their kids, because the kid didn't ask for the target on his back. So I get that. But you want to provide them as normal a life. A former Tulsan here, David Gates from Bread.
Oh, yeah, my favorite.
Yeah, he grew up in rural Washington and
Washington County.
No, rural Washington, after his years...
With Brad. Oh, yeah.
Later in life, he lived...
You said he grew up.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. His kids grew up okay. there, and his son married a gal that it wasn't until just before their wedding she found out her future father-in-law was the David Gates. That's how much he was able to live a normal life. But it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. I mean, Clarence Thomas, when Supreme Court's not in session, he and his wife, Vicky, get in an RV, and they'll just travel around the country, and they've probably been through Tulsa.
Yeah.
And we didn't know it, and right. they like it that way.
Yeah,
right. And he says occasionally he'll be at an RV park, and somebody will say, yeah, you are that guy. I know, people, don't just tell me you look like him. You're Justice Thomas.
Right, he says,
can we have a peaceful visit? I'd love to have a beer with you tonight, but let's just make it just folks. You can talk about it after we pull up stakes and go. But Clarence will talk about that now, probably because he's done doing the RV stuff. I don't know. You know, he's up there, what, in this, well into his 70s now. So, but, yeah, it's that's what I'm getting at with Maria is as long as you haven't spoiled the kid rotten.
Right.
Because if you have, he's damaged. Then I don't know if we can release him back in the wild.
Well, you know, yeah, a perfect example to me, okay? Release him into the wild.
Well, I think it's a good analogy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But, okay, I look at Donald Trump's kids, okay?
Yeah.
I don't see a spoiled rottenness in them.
Right.
Okay? Right. You can look at them. They know how to carry themselves. Yeah, yeah, I mean, you look at, you see they were raised right. And you wonder, okay, how does somebody like that, you know, and but it's him, you know, it's him to a T. Well, and if you look at Ivana, you know, they divorced, but until she died, she still respected Donald. They just Absolutely. Didn't get along,
Absolutely.
You know, and he apparently they worked a deal with he I know this sounds weird, but I think he was honorable in that he took care of her.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, and he spoke respectfully of her in front of the kids.
Right, exactly.
Because Ivanka was very tight with her mother.
Right, right. What? And even what's her name? Marla Maples.
Yes.
Marla Maples.
Yeah, and their daughter, okay. What's her name?
Yeah, I forget. She just got married here last year, too. And when you look at the kids together, they were always all very close. He took care of all, they were all his precious children. And they're all close, they're all together, they take care of each other, they're with each. But see, this is, when my son was at Union, my youngest, played football, there were two brothers that played that weren't, they were stepbrothers. And they grew up in different households. They were only a couple of years, I think 2 years apart. But the parents had divorced, and the mom got pregnant by the new dad, and the other baby was born. So anyway, they weren't even related. That's right, no. The one was his stepbrother from the new family.
Right. Not half-brother, stepbrother.
Stepbrothers, but they were like a year apart or something. Anyway, but if one got hurt, the younger one, when he got hurt, the other brother, the stepbrother, was right over there, or if anybody messed with him. But that's how these kids were raised, that even though the parents didn't make it, they raised these kids to love one another. And they always spoke, as you said, respectfully, and the, no sense, in other words, no sense in bringing hatred, bitterness, or whatever into the situation that they had nothing to do with.
Right.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
If you will understand that this was our problem, not their problem.
We have to
keep it that way to raise the best child that we can raise.
All right. It's time for me to come clean on this.
Okay.
Eddie, you and I had debated during the 16 campaign. I was a Cruz supporter, right? Before that, I was actually Rand Paul. You didn't start out
a Trump supporter.
But eventually came down to those two, and then you and I had our famous social media debates and that.
Famous.
But, you know, I wanted to believe the worst of Donald Trump. I did. I wanted to believe he was connected to the mafia. I even post on Facebook, nobody succeeds in New York without making a deal with organized crime. Did I have any proof for that? No, that was just a gratuitous assertion on my part. No evidence to back it up. But I wanted to believe that narrative. I wanted to believe his kids were spoiled brats. And to quote Dr. Everett Piper, crow never tasted so good. He's a better man and a better father. Now, I'm not going to call him a good husband because he struck out.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the guy was a lecher at a period in his life. Mm-hmm, I don't believe that about him now.
Right.
But anyway, so I just want to say that it's good to know I was wrong. And I'm ashamed to say I assumed the worst in a person. That is not honorable on my part. So you're here first. Okay. Well,
all right.
Took me this long to clean publicly on it.
Yeah. The problem with Donald Trump is that he's a man.
Yeah.
I had this friend. Actually, it's Booker T. Washington's great-granddaughter. She's one of my best friends. Yeah, very, very close. Amazing person, amazing speaker. She's never been married. She takes care of her mother, which is Booker T. Washington's granddaughter. But anyway, and she always has this saying, you know, she says, "What do you expect? He's a man." And she I guess just learned through the years to, you know, not over expect men to be different than men are, and then let them surprise you to the upside and not disappoint you to the downside. So if you will start out expecting men to be men and then judge them as they go, that's the best way to do it. That way you won't be overly disappointed. Now, you can still be disappointed, and there are lines that you cannot allow to be crossed. But it makes forgiveness easier, and at the same time, allows you not to overvalue anyone.
It really fits very well with an axiom I've had of hurt comes from unmet expectations. And sometimes you're hurt, and it's your own fault. Because you had no right to have an expectation that wasn't clearly dealing with
you. You know, I'll tell you what a perfect illustration of this is. And it happens in the church. Mm-hmm. We raise pastors to too high of an expectation. And then when the pastor falls, people fall away.
Yeah.
If you don't look at a pastor as being more than a man with a calling, then you understand that there's no extra reason, or there's not any more reason he shouldn't fall than there is for the common man to fall. In fact, he's probably under a greater attack than the average man because of the station.
Perhaps, yes.
Just think of it. I mean, the enemy, who's he going to go after?
Right.
You want to take out the general.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to take out the foot soldier. You want to go after the general. So, and who can you hurt the congregation with more by taking out somebody in the congregation or taking out the commander? You know right. what I mean? So I've always been of the... I don't follow a pastor, mm-hmm. a priest, if I were a Jew, a rabbi, a teacher, So I've been through several, you know, movements of the church, you know, mm-hmm. back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Not 60, I'm sorry, in the 70s. When the 60s, it was the Catholic Church, and right. the 70s, the Charismatic Church, right. and so forth. You know, we've seen the faith preachers, the yeah. this preachers, the that preachers, mm-hmm. and I've seen them come and go. I've seen many, many come, many fall, mm-hmm. and so forth, but I've never, it's never bothered me. I've yeah. never been... it's never shaken my faith when I find out that so-and-so ran off with this, you know, his secretary, or this one did this, or this one's teaching turned out to be this, or flaky, or blah, 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 you know, or somebody, I met him and it turned out to be a real flake or a jerk mm-hmm. or whatever. I just said, man, he's a jerk, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Christian artists. Oh, yeah. You know, too, you know, when we met these, you know, certain art people that these Christian artists selling, you know, millions of records, and mm-hmm. you know, because I used to tour with these people, and I get to meet them, and I realize, oh my goodness, I'll never do anything with them again or something. But it doesn't bother me, because I know that, again, they're just people, and so I've learned to just understand and pray for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. So you know who's just now discovering early Christian rock music? Joe Rogan. About 3 weeks ago, he had a podcast on.
Are you serious?
And he's playing Larry Norman. I'm not
kidding. Joe Rogan is playing Larry Norman.
Yes. And it's just so catchy. All through about a two-hour conversation with his comedian, why don't you look into Jesus? And he starts talking about, he says, you know, this is the thing. I'm still looking for some authentic Christian leader.
Oh, my goodness.
Who isn't trying to bed all the women. He says, you know, you get these real charismatic, really popular. He says, I see some good-looking TV preachers, and I'm like, oh, you know, how many women have you had? You know, and because he's that cynical.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's just seen too much of the corruption, or maybe paid too much attention. But he, you know, you and I both know Larry Norman has his baggage too, you know. But the message, Joe is still looking for that, what C.S. Lewis called mere Christianity.
Right.
I really want to see the authentic thing.
Yeah.
Without all the exploitation thereof, you know. So yeah. It's but yeah, yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, I it's funny how it works, because when I first got saved, I was rejected by my friends. Mm-hmm. I had these friends.
Even your gay friends.
Well, yeah, that too. My gay friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, my best friend who's gay, yeah. But anyway, but the friends that I was hanging with, my doping buddies, mm-hmm. Started calling me a G the next day, you know, the word got out quick, so I started hanging out with this new group of Jesus freaks. Mm-hmm. They were at a swimming pool, and we would hang out there, and a bunch of them were lifeguards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like one... Two would sit up in the towers, and the other we'd sit around, and they'd be sharing the word and talking about Jesus, and I'm just sitting there listening and lapping it up. And then after their 15 minutes, they'd switch, and the other two would come down. Well, anyway, one of them came down. I mean, one of them turned out, I started liking her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to the point where, you know, I basically fell in love with this girl. And this lasted. And then she ended up leaving and going to college. But we communicated, and, you know. And then before she left, though, I told her that, you know, I didn't know what it was like, or just to pray about it. But I was attracted to her, and, you know. So anyway, we stayed in touch. Well, but then she liked this. She says, well, brother, you know, the old brother.
Patronizing.
Well, thank you, but, you know, I'm not feeling the same thing. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you. But we stay in touch. So that Christmas, she came home. And, but I will say, but we were good friends, still good. But she encouraged me, and she would give me these books to read. And I was trying to keep up with her.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to, you know, my best to keep up with this girl. And she would give me these books, and I'm reading these books. And, I mean, just learning, like, Lord of the Valleys, about how God is not the God when things are good. God is God when things are not good. And, I mean, just book after, you know, I mean, just really, really, I mean, all kinds of books I used to really read like crazy. Prison to Praise, Power and Praise, Answer to Praise, Merlin Carruthers. Did you ever read those books?
I'm familiar with the author.
Man, those are still today some of the best books you can get.
Yeah.
You can get them on. They're harder to find. You can probably get them on Amazon. If not, look them up. But
eBay's a good source, too.
But the main one, the first one, Power and Praise, is just... should be a classic. They need to reprint. If not, I'm going to ask for permission, because that book changed my life.
Yeah.
But anyway, but so all this went on. So she comes back at Christmas, and she says, you know, remember what you told me way back then, blah, blah. Well, I feel the same too now. And so all of a sudden, yeah, so get this. So that goes on. So then she goes back to school, so we're corresponding. So in the meantime, I go up to visit her, and at that time, I felt we sealed the deal. We were like meant, you know. I'm in my head, I'm making plans.
Yep.
You know, in my mind for us to get married. So I come back on like Sunday. I spent a whole week with these friends, and I'd go see her up at Texas Woman's University. When she got out of school, and then we'd stay up out eating with her friends. And I went to this church that she went to, this little Baptist church out in the country, where I was the first and only black person to ever been in that church. And so anyway, so I come back to El Paso. But that Friday night, this friend of mine, or Thursday, this friend of mine, I was a deacon. And I hate to bore everybody with my story, but this is a crazy story. So this friend calls me, and said, we would take friends leading the people that came forward to receive Jesus into a back room. We were prayer room counselors.
Yeah.
So my friend calls me and says, Eddie, I can't make it this Friday night. Would you mind taking the room? I said, yeah, okay, Dave, I'll do it. His name was David. So he said, yeah, I'll do it. So I do it. So I go up, and so this group, there were three people came forward, and they said, all right, those of you that came forward, look over, you see that guy over there? His name's Eddie. Raise your hand, Eddie. So I raise my hand. Okay, follow Eddie back into this room. Well, there were three people there. It was three girls. And so me and two other people, a couple of girls and me, we're going back. So I'm telling them what it's like receiving Christ and how to help. And I look in the corner, and there's this girl sitting there crying, tears in her eyes and everything, and these other two girls. But this girl in the corner, for some reason, I'm looking at her, and she's got these tears in her eyes. And I'm feeling this attraction to her. And I'm freaking out. I'm saying, this is weird. This is the devil.
No,
because you know I just came back from seeing my girl up here in Denton, a Texas Woman's, and you know I'm getting ready to think about marrying this other girl, and I'm, you know, here's this Jezebel just shows up.
Did you hear that?
so I'm sitting there, you know, and so it's all over. You know, with this thing, we pray and everything. And this girl comes up and, thank you very much, and takes my hand. And I'm doing this thing, you know. oh, my cousin, I came with my cousin tonight. She brought me. Thank you so much. And I said, oh, yeah, I know Sharon. Yeah. And da, da, da. And so, okay, now you know about our Sunday We have a Sunday service, Sunday evening service. We didn't have a Sunday morning service. No, we did have Sunday. We had just started Sunday service, Donna. Yeah, okay, well, I'll see, Donna. Well, so it was the weirdest thing. I couldn't get this girl out of my mind. And Sunday, and I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, what is going on? You know, because, you know, I feel like all of a sudden I'm a gigolo.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm in
got
love.
Two of them.
I'm in love with this girl, and I'm meeting this girl, and I couldn't shake this girl. And so Sunday's come along, and is she coming? You know, mm-hmm. And then you know, and so finally, and she came. She mm-hmm. shows up Sunday, and I was thinking, oh, great. And so I finally went to my pastor. I said, Fred, I don't know what to do. You know.
Yeah, you let her to Christ.
I've got you know, Jenny up here in Denton, and now this new girl, and he just starts laughing. He said, oh, ha, 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 you young people make it so hard. You want Jesus to just show up and tell you, this is the one.
Yeah,
you know? And
I know.
He said, that's not how it works.
Nope.
You know?
Nope, it doesn't.
You know, you just have to, you go out, and it'll work itself out. It'll manifest itself. Yep. But anyway, but this went on for like, oh, my goodness. It went on probably 6 months. And then...
You were in
I'm
agony.
I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but...
You were in agony.
Oh, I was in agony. But anyway, one of them won.
Yes.
One of the two won.
I've met her.
Yeah, you met one of them. Yeah, you met one of them.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, 40-some years later...
Mm-hmm.
40-some years later. Oh, by the way, the two of them ended up becoming roommates at Texas Woman.
Oh, my God!
And then we didn't see each other for over 40 years. And just recently, we came back into contact, and my wife just saw the other one
mm-hmm.
in Florida. She lives in the same town where our son Michael, with Florida Panthers.
Wow.
She lives in the same town.
Ouch.
In Fort Lauderdale. Can you believe it? How God works. But I have to say that girl,
mm-hmm.
the first one, is still today. Oh, I just gave it away. Anyway, that girl is still one of the most important people
mm-hmm.
in my being a Christian today.
Sure.
Because of the things she taught me.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was saved before me,
mm-hmm.
but God used her to encourage me and mm-hmm. challenge me
yeah.
in the books she gave me and encouraged me to read and everything to who I am today. Many of the things that she said and the books she had me read are things that are still implanted in
that's
me today.
Neat.
It's just amazing how God works. I mean,
yeah.
It's the weirdest thing.
And the other one who bore your children, I just heard you call her Jezebel.
This just stays between. I'm sure Alto's the only one that's out there. Oh, of course. Now watch Alto call my wife, knowing him.
Oh man,
this will be the most popular, the most shared video of all of it. But, no, seriously though, but that's just how it was. And I tell you what's interesting too. I've got to say this because there are a lot of people from Jesus Chapel, which is the church that we were all
right
group. It was more
one of the plants of Calvary Chapel,
right, and more kind of Jesus freaks.
Mm-hmm.
And but we're all over the place now, but a lot of us stay in touch through Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so amazing how all of the people that are in touch are so like-minded still today without sharing. Like, so when the Israel thing comes up, you know, we'll see a lot of Facebook posts from people wanting to take the Palestinian side,
mm-hmm.
Christians
mm-hmm.
that don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
But every last person from those days, and the Calvary Chapel people too that I know,
mm-hmm.
they all think the same. It's funny how we're all so you know, like-minded. We see things the same, that we understand the importance of. We don't know a lot of Jews. We're not defenders of necessarily Israel as the political Israel, but the Jewish nation, the Jewish state. You know what I mean?
Yep.
The biblical Israel we are in solidarity with, and we're opposed to the evils of Islam and the nations trying to destroy
the terrorists, especially.
Right. You know, especially. And those that are trying to destroy Israel.
Yeah.
The true Israel.
Right.
And so we all understand what's really at play behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're all one. It's weird how we're all like-minded, even though we haven't seen each other in years. We live in different cities, different states. We're all over the place. Everyone is so one-minded, and we sit under different teachings. We're in different churches. But that one thing that was implanted in us 50 years ago.
Yeah, but I do believe you take on a lot of the character of the head of the movement. I think Chuck Smith's sensibilities were embedded in a lot of people just by being receptive to him.
That's probably true.
And his genuineness, you know. I really believe that. You had mentioned about, you know, the struggle that you dealt with. God, which one are you wanting me to have? I don't believe God chooses our spouse. I believe God holds a veto power. But the last time God chose a spouse, as soon as something went wrong, she blamed him. It was Adam and Eve. Since then.
You mean he blamed her?
Adam said, the woman that you gave me, she gave me to eat, and then I ate. I always wanted to blame somebody else. That's, you know, human nature. But I think, first of all, God doesn't command us to get married. If you read, you know, the epistles of Paul,
he prefers if you don't.
Yeah, he calls that his own personal thing.
Yeah, if you have a gift, right.
But he said, because of sin, you know, and some of you need to.
Right.
Because of what you're battling with.
The flesh, right.
But really, it's, you know, whom you choose within the guidance, so that God doesn't say, here's a veto because of this thing. She's not a follower. You know, my kids ask me, Dad, what do you believe about mixed marriages? You believe it's wrong? I said, yeah, it's wrong. But let me explain. Mixed marriage is a believer marrying a non-believer.
Right.
Because God refers to, and Paul tells us, and Peter, that you are a holy nation, speaking of all believers, a set-aside people. So we are all, whatever shade of beige we are, we are one people called by Christ.
Right.
And marrying outside of that is a mixed marriage.
Yeah, it's funny because I took I was in college and I broke up with this girlfriend I had in college. And she was in Germany. She was mixed like me.
Mm-hmm.
She was half German, half black.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to, took a marriage and family class because we broke up and I was kind of shook up about everything and questioning. And so I took a marriage and family class, and the teacher was a former Baptist preacher. And he was dealing with all these different blockages to marriage and barriers and challenges. And he dealt with the interracial thing, but he spent like 5 minutes on it and then moved to these other things. And he spent like a whole week on the interfaith thing.
Yeah.
And so I said, can I come to see you? And he said, yeah, sure. So I said, I don't get it. What? Because this was Lubbock, Texas, 1970, you know, I'm thinking, or 71, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, the racial thing would be a big deal.
And, Southern Baptists really held to it for a long time.
And so I went to see him. I said, why did you only spend? And he said, oh, that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. The interracial thing, he said, that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But interfaith, that's a big deal. I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, I know interracial thing. He said, if you come from that same faith belief, you'll stick it through. You'll work it out. He said, but the faith thing, that's what will kill you, you know. But he really opened my eyes, you know, mm-hmm. to that whole deal. And he's the one who first, and he's the one who, I would say he was probably the first one to really get me kind of going on a spiritual thing, because the last day of class, he said, I've asked you questions all year now. I'll let you. And so somebody said, is it true that you got kicked out of your church? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's true. And then, why did you get kicked out? And he started telling a story, and that his wife was sick, mm-hmm. and she was real bad, bedridden and everything. And he was a Baptist pastor, and how some people had talked about healing. And so, you know, he asked them to come over. Oh, that is you this time.
That one's me, yep.
Anyway, he asked them to come over, and they came over and started praying. And he said he's sitting there, he didn't believe in it. And all of a sudden, when I was sitting there in the living room, his wife walked out, and she had been healed. And he couldn't believe it. It was a miracle. And after that, then he began to believe it.
Yeah.
And then he prayed for this gift. Mm-hmm. And started speaking in tongues. They went through that, and they kicked him out of his church.
Yep.
He was the pastor. And I'm sitting there.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I'm 20 years old, you know,
yeah.
at 2021. I said, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What did he? And I'm looking around, and a lot of these kids had heard about it. They knew. And I'm looking, what in the heck? What are these people talking about? You know, yeah. I'd never heard of any of this stuff.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, it's called glossolalia. And
yeah.
Glossolalia.
Yeah.
I wonder how you spell that.
That's
you know?
A seminary word.
Yeah. And so then he said, well, I can't tell you. I can't talk about it. I can't say anything.
Yeah.
But if you're interested, I happen to have some printouts here on my desk. If you're interested, take
there
one
you
as
go.
You leave. Yeah. And so quiet. You know, after, you know, as I'm leaving, everybody's grabbing some of this. And
yeah.
I took it. And so it's funny because I remember going home and praying, you know, that night, praying and just waiting for
yep.
God to come over me or some
yep.
angel to appear, you
yep.
know. And it took another year. It was a year later yep. before I ever accepted the Lord. But I believe it was right then
yep.
that started the process of, I had some different freaky things happen, which maybe I'll talk about one day. But anyway, that's how it happened.
How did we
get here?
Well,
from
Kenneth Hagin referred to that experience that former pastor had. It's called the left foot of fellowship.
The left foot. Just, the Baptist left foot, yeah.
Got yeah. The, yeah, he said he
the went, right hand and the left foot.
Yeah,
huh?
But see, Kenneth Hagin had always, as a Baptist minister, always preached about the healing power of God, because as a teenager, he had been divinely healed. He had was born with a heart condition. He was bedridden for over a year. And all of a sudden, he just acted on his faith, and he just believed God and got healed.
You know what's so sad? Who, to me, I think is worse than the Baptists. In fact, Baptists, I think, have really mellowed on the subject.
They, in many ways,
yeah.
they have.
But to me, the one that's worse is Dallas Theological Cemetery. Seminary. Cemetery. Mm-hmm. Seminary.
Is that Disciples of Christ?
I don't know what the DST is.
Okay.
Or DTS. I don't know. I know I went to their mm-hmm. Bible college there. I actually, Dallas Bible College, which feeds into there. I actually took classes there. It's great. I mean, as far as a school academically, it's great, but they're so anti charismatic.
Yeah.
But, you know, and what's interesting, Vadi Bachman. You know Vadi Bachman? Have you heard
no.
of him? Black preacher. Yeah, go check him out. He's very popular these days. He's written books, and he's got a bunch of YouTube stuff. He's very good, very, very intelligent guy, good speaker. He's very popular right now. But he's very much, you know, anti-charismatic and very opinionated, which is sad to me because I think he has a lot of potential, a lot of reach, and a lot of wisdom. I mean, the guy really is smart. He speaks into a lot of things. But to me, anytime you get that dogmatic about things,
yeah,
and that anti-charismatic, it just kind of shuts you off from a whole segment of the, and they're yeah. they're so hyper dispensationalist that, you know, I mean, that whole dispensationalism that believes that the period of gifts,
yeah,
that it ended,
that's what I
the get. Apostolic age, that it ended there with the death of the apostles.
Right.
Who says? Why? How?
I just pulled up on Wikipedia. Yeah, Dallas Theological is non-denominational, but right. they are most well known for pushing the theory of dispensationalism. Mm-hmm. That is kind of their hallmark. They right. came up with that all by themselves.
Oh, did they?
Well, they think they got it from God.
Right.
But yeah, I have a problem with that too. They believe that once we got the full canon of the scripture,
right.
that all the gifts and all the other things, oh, now we're just straight word.
Right.
And a lot of Baptists have adhered to that.
Right, right. Yeah, they were very much aligned with Southern Baptist yeah. theology, but they've stuck to it more than the Baptists, even. So
yeah.
the credit to the Baptists, at least, they've kind of loosened up and accepted. For example, my church, I couldn't believe one day, you know, a pastor was talking about if you need healing, come for it, and he pulls out a vial of oil. What? You know, a Baptist preacher with oil, anointing people with oil.
They read the book of James.
I know, but I'm just thinking, this is weird, you know, because I can't believe it. Praying for healing, you know,
yeah.
expecting God and anointing people with oil.
See, right, in dispensationalism would just know that that's not part of what they consider the hallmark
right.
of this church.
Did I say anti-dispensationalist? I mean, they were dispensationalists. Yeah, they
right.
believed that was that age and that ended with the apostles.
So I've got a good Baptist friend. He was groomsman at my wedding. I mean, we just go way back to our childhood together. He called me one day, this is probably 30 years ago, and he sounded horrible. I'm here, Dave. And I said, Ken, what's up?
Do I need to exercise a demon?
I'm asking you to pray for me. You know, I said, okay. Now, we would debate theology all the time. We have a very close friendship, and we challenge each other. Very Socratic, you know. And I said, yeah, Ken, I will, you know. So I said, look, let's just pray now. You know, we don't need to talk about it. Let's pray. And we prayed and finished the prayer. And he says, amen. And I prayed a prayer of faith for God's healing, you know, believing that what I say shall come to pass. He shall have whatsoever he saith. And I said, Ken, I got one question. I said, you go to a Baptist church. I said, why didn't you call the elders of the church? He said, Dave, when I want good teaching, I go to the Baptists. When I want healing, I go to the Pentecostals. That's for you, Ken.
You know what? That is so right on.
Yes.
Because you cannot go get better teaching and preaching than a Baptist. I'm convinced
they're known for that.
They know how to preach the word of God.
They do the best Sunday school programs. The system. Because... And here's the problem. Sometimes we get too caught up in our systems of theology is bringing about our salvation. I have one guy, Pat, my friend who went to Japuza, helped publish Cornerstone magazine. And he, one of my first Christian friends, But he was starting a discussion, and another guy, you know, had answered. He said, what is the least minimum someone needs to believe to be a Christian? And I said, you just got to believe in Jesus. Jesus is our Savior. And some people started debating because they said, well, the Apostles' Creed. If you don't believe the Apostles' Creed. And I said, you don't need any more than what the thief at the cross needed. Either that or you're saying he didn't have salvation. That Jesus was leading him on. You know? And, well, see, but that's part of the Apostles' Creed. I said, no. I said, the Apostles' Creed refers to acts that hadn't even happened. How could he believe the Apostles' Creed when it was unfinished at that point in history? Oh, wow, you know, and I said, all you need is Jesus. And it was like I've told you before, Stuart McBurney, the theological student at Fullerton Seminary, or Fuller Seminary.
Fuller. Mm-hmm.
And had written to C.S. Lewis and said, how watered down can someone's Christianity be and still save him? C.S. Lewis wrote him back. Yeah, you do, Mr. Big Barney. Jesus, Christianity doesn't save anyone. Jesus does. It's not our system of theology.
No.
It's not an intellectual pursuit.
No, that's why.
It's a surrendering of our heart.
Yeah, and, you know, you can't put God in a box because you, you know, it's always weird how miracles happen to sometimes the most unlikely people,
Yeah. The
most unlikely situation, sometimes the most undeserving. I mean, you know, I know of people that you would think would be just sinners, undeserving.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a visitation from the Lord and being healed.
Absolutely.
And somebody that you think the saintly person, mm-hmm, praying and seeking God and everybody's praying for them and they don't get a healing.
Yeah.
And you want to say, why Lord, you know?
Yeah.
And the only thing I ever come back to, this is why the wisdom of C.S. Lewis,
mm-hmm,
he's not a tame lion.
Yeah, you know, that's it.
I always think of that. I always say he's not a tame lion. We don't control him. We cannot control God.
Yeah.
God is going to do what he's going to do. He knows why, and we can't know the infinite mind of God.
Yeah.
And we just have to trust and relax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's the most we can do. Oh, by the way, one story I did forget, and I feel it's important. Democrat Representative Jamal Bowman.
Yeah.
That story.
Yeah, the former high school, middle school principal.
Yeah, middle school.
There's some things you learn.
I'm sure. You think they ever had any fire drills in his school?
Yeah, I think there are plenty of kids trying to get out of a history test.
And, yeah, so for those who don't know, Representative Bowman pulled the fire alarm in the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to avoid a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, well, they say now it's a misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a little worse than that. But anyway,
I think it's an insurrection. Hey, everybody had to clear the building just like January 6th.
That's true. That's right? True. I mean, I would think it would be worse than that, but they made it a misdemeanor. In any event, they found him guilty of a misdemeanor. He tried to lie. Of course, he says he wasn't lying, but he was fined $1,000,
mm-hmm,
and put on probation.
Did you see the video that came out last night? We always saw the still shot.
Right, from the side.
Right. They showed the video. First, he went over to the door where there were these signs, you know, emergency exit only,
right,
the alarms will,
right,
sound. He tore both of those signs down, and then he pulled the lever. Live video of it. Yeah.
They need to arrest him.
He was just confused and late for a vote, Eddie.
Yeah. Now, here's my deal. Imagine it had been a Republican.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have wanted him expelled.
Yeah. The horns guy would have got another 5 years for it.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, this shows us where we're at in our political arena today. It's sad. I mean, it's really sad. And for the Democrats to sit there and just put up with this or defend it, not just put up with it, but defend it. What this tells me is that the Republicans need to do everything they can to defend our congressman from New York.
Yeah. Yes.
And sadly,
hold him to the Biden standard of honesty.
And sadly, though, I think that there are Republicans that are trying to help throw him overboard.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Because they're reputable people.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, this is what's sad.
Yep.
And if you look at what he's done in office, he's been true to everything he said he went there for.
Oh, you can't have that.
You can. Yeah. Yeah. You can. You can go in and do every dirty, nasty, illegal thing to our people, to your reps.
Yeah.
I mean, to your public.
Yeah.
The constituents. That's okay. But don't.
Yeah, if you don't roll over and do what the lobbyists ask you to do, bye, we got to get rid of you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Don't lie to the people getting in. I mean, you know, and I'll be honest, I don't think most of the people who voted in him care. Really. I really don't think they care.
Yeah.
They just wanted to get a Republican in there and wanted to get him. I mean, honestly, they should leave it to the people. Just let him. He's coming up here next year.
Yeah, it's a 2-year
It's term. A 2-year deal. He's almost up. Just let him run again.
It's not like Senator Blumenthal who gets 6 years.
Yeah, but see, but I believe the problem is they're afraid that he might win again. So they want to make sure that he doesn't get a chance to run again.
Well, it isn't working with Trump because all the indictments in the world have not slowed down Trump's campaign.
That's why they're afraid. That's why they're afraid.
I've got a lighthearted story I want to
Okay, we'll finish on that.
All right. So 5 years ago, I decided to write a little story, just kind of get a discussion going. The idea of, we've got Interstate 40, which central Oklahoma goes across, and then the United States interstate system skips to Interstate 70 going through upper part of Kansas. And for us going east-west, we either got to go south or we got to go north. And I was like, wait a minute, where's Interstate 50 and 60? So I wrote a deal about a proposed Interstate 50 going from Las Vegas that would go all the way to Atlanta and or Birmingham, actually, and showed all the ways it would help. And by God, that thing went viral in the most weird way. Because little cities along that proposed route all of a sudden latched on. This could happen. We could have interstate, you know, because of what it does for commerce, right?
Right, right. Yeah,
and, well, this week in Pryor, they're having a public forum on changing what was called U.S. 412 into an interstate class. Now, it wouldn't be called Interstate 50 yet, but it would tie in because over in Branson, I think a lot of the Walmart money is involved in this. Highway 71 going from Kansas City all the way down to Fort Smith got changed to interstate class. And you know Walmart trucking very much benefits from that. The other designation is it gets federal money for the maintenance and upkeep of it because now it's part of our federal interstate system. So what I'm saying is at least the eastern half of Oklahoma would greatly benefit if the federal government would adopt seeing the need, the interstate need for that, especially with Branson. You know, I mean, not Branson, Bentonville, I'm sorry, Bentonville, you know, with the trucking. I mean, the world's biggest retailer, You know, so anyway, I just thought that was interesting that, you know, we started talk on something, and guess who's behind it right now and heading up the forum is former U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's a few other people behind it, but you know Walmart's behind it.
So where would 50 begin? California?
Right. Actually, the most difficult time, piece of it would be from Las Vegas to Bakersfield, California.
Because it's going through mountains again.
The Yosemites. Yeah. And that's a tough one because they drop off. That's why we have Death Valley.
Right.
It drops off, you know, from high heights. But California, desperate. They only have two interstates. Yeah. You go way up north of Sacramento by Reno. What's that lake?
Tahoe.
Or you got to go south of
has 10.
Bernardino.
Yeah, it's got 10.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go south of Bernardino to get around the south side of the mountains.
Right.
So it would be huge, and that would probably be the ideal candidate for Elon Musk to roll out his tunnel company. He's actually working on right now a proposal to run tunnels under L.A., for express, because you know how bad LA's traffic is. Right. It's nuts. But I think that would be a great thing. But from Las Vegas, you would go basically by Four Corners and Telluride, Durango, and then kind of weave along. You stay north of Albuquerque, you know, but almost by Pueblo, and you just follow along, and then you come down through Guymon and pick up at Blackwell there south of, you know, on the south side of our Kansas border. Because it's actually Enid, you know, continues further. So you go from Enid, continue along northern Oklahoma. But then, you know, from the other side.
Would it come through here?
It does. Comes right through Tulsa, 412.
So because you would need the 44. Because right now we got 44 that runs up to St. Louis.
But this is the Cimarron Turnpike, as we know, to get to Stillwater. But then 412 takes us to Siloam Springs, where it ties in at Bentonville.
Right. But what I'm saying is, so the 44 would probably tie into...
It wouldn't actually tie in.
It would cross it.
Right. Uh-huh. Here in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Literally...
The 44 actually dies here.
No.
How far does 44 go?
It actually goes down to Wichita Falls, Texas. Goes through Lawton.
No, I'm talking about going north.
Oh, going north, it goes to St. Louis.
Oh, 44 goes all the way. That's right.
Yeah, and I think it gets renumbered to go to Chicago, because the old Route 66 went from Chicago to L.A., and much of it is 44. But the cool thing is, to go from Bentonville, then... The ideal thing would be to get it to come up the south side of Branson, because Branson's not served well by highway system. But then from there, you go to Poplar Bluff and Cape Girardeau and then come back down through northern Mississippi.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah, but it's expensive. I think what you do is you take already four-lane divided highway and you adopt it in. The downside... I mean, you've got some expensive interchanges because, like, you know, you go out here by, some of these roads on 412. You got dangerous intersections. Well, to be interstate class, you can't have intersections. You can't have stoplights.
Right.
So you got to build bridges over intersections. Right. And you could argue that for safety going out here, you know, east of Tulsa on 412. That is some dangerous intersections.
Well, maybe they'll call it the Von Risingham Expressway.
I just want to see it built. But the funny thing is I just threw that out there, and all of a sudden I've seen all the hits on it, and it's little community newspapers picking it up and citing Sooner Politics as the authoritative source. So now they can say Jim Inhofe.
Or
it'll
be the Sooner Expressway.
There you go.
That's a better way.
There you go.
Yeah. But of course, it'll probably end up being the Inhofe.
Yeah, Memorial Highway.
Memorial Highway. Yeah, that's right.
Hey, I don't care. I just want good roads.
No, I know. I hear you. That'd be good. That'd be really good to go to California on, though. Yeah.
Oh, Las Vegas to Bakersfield would be huge. Mm-hmm. Huge.
Yeah.
But I do think that would be the best argument for Elon's tunnel system, because to get up, at least to get the grade where I don't think they like to go more than a 7% grade, 7 degrees up, you know, because anyway, but I think it'd be cool.
Yeah, I'm yawning here.
So that's a little end note to highlight another good show.
Cool, yep. As they say in Germany. Cool, man. Yep. Cool.
And by the way, welcome to winter. Those of you in Oklahoma,
yeah,
catch it. It feels like it, and
we could, feels good.
Yeah,
yeah, feels good.
Could get some white stuff. Time to get the long sleeves out. There you go. Yep.
All right, everybody. I think that does it. Hey, look forward to seeing you next week.
All right.
Take care and have a great week. Oh, wrong one. We're going to start another hallway. I don't think that's the right one either, is it?
Let's play all of them at once. Climbing up that hill.
Wow. No, no, oh no.